for my monster from his slab began to rise. Then suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the match.
He did the monster match.
The monster match.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the match.
It got on in a flash.
He did the match.
He did the monster match. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the match.
They did the monster match.
The monster match.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the match.
Gothic eye.
They did the monster match. The zombies were having fun.
The party had just begun.
If you've never seen this YouTube video,
it included
you haven't lived.
Dracula and his son.
Hi.
The scene was rocky, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin
dancers
were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the match.
They played the monster match.
The monster match.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the match.
It was on in a flash.
They played the match.
They played the monster match. Out from his coffin, Jack's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the match.
Now the monster match.
The monster match.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the match.
It's the horn and the flash.
It's now the match.
It's now the monster match. Now everything's cool, Jack's a part of the plan. My monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. If you get to my door, tell them what is sent.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And you buy me God's smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll get on the plan.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
This is the best video in the entire world. Have you ever seen a video for this song?
No. Honestly, no.
It's the best. I didn't think there was any way to make that song better, aside from the version we played on this program here before.
Mashing it with clips from every horror movie of all time?
Like every horrible horror movie of all time.
I see.
Like there's a woman in a high rise and a giant cat's paw reaches in the window. There's a man who has an eyeball on his shoulder. There's just various freaks, Godzilla frolicking. It's the best. There's even a clip from Plan 9 from Outer Space. Everybody, Google Monster Mash. It is the first thing that comes up on Google. It is the video for this song. I watched that video about 6 times this afternoon. I watched it 6 times and I fell more in love with it every single time. Such complete horrible shit that was passed off as horror in the 50s and 60s is great. I wish we had a video podcast, or I could do play by play of each of these scary. There's an ape, just a man in an ape outfit that attacks a woman. This show can't follow that. We're going to talk about Raw.
Should we just review YouTube clips all night?
Can I just review the Monster Mash? Let me go through a little of this.
All right.
I'll keep the volume down.
Exactly, yeah, so we can hear you.
Yeah. Apparently there was a movie just got cut out of the thing here. Bobby, Boris Pickett, and the Crypt Keepers. There's a shrunken head. Of course, we've got a woman screaming. We've got Frankenstein being reanimated. Are you loading it up right now?
I am, actually. I feel left out. I'll skip ahead a bit.
We've got a brain, a floating brain with eyes.
Where are you right
now? Oversized. We've got Godzilla. Skip forward to 33 seconds.
Okay, about 20, yeah.
There's a Godzilla-like beast frolicking.
Yes.
Frankenstein, Dracula.
Okay, even I don't know what that second Godzilla thing was.
A giant ape, an insect trying to come in through a window. A giant insect, mind you.
That is a grasshopper.
You're a little behind.
I'm still a little behind. That's okay.
Yeah. Here's a woman. I don't even know what's happening to this woman. Here comes the brain, a creeping brain.
She's being swallowed by something.
Now we've got Coffin being pushed out of the way by an undead man. We have a man whose face is just changing into a scary face. The hypnotic eye. Scary zombies. Dancing women. A woman with her hair on fire. The wolf man. Dracula's eyes. Now we've got a chick here at the sock hop.
Let's get ahead a bit more.
You've got to get ahead here with me.
Oh, perfect.
Yes, Frankenstein is rising from the dead.
Young
we've got
Frankenstein, in
men
fact.
With torches.
Feast from 20,000 fathoms.
Feast from 20,000 fathoms, yes.
Ray Harryhausen classic.
Yeah, stumping on cars.
The fly.
The fucking fly.
I don't know what that was. That was, there was an on the shoulder. There's
a chupacabra.
Lots of just ugly people. What?
A man with tights that are way too small. His cock and balls were visible, unfortunately. Dracula. Oh my God, Young Frankenstein. We need to watch that movie and review it.
You've never seen that, have you?
I have.
You have?
But I was in like sixth grade. Elvira, I believe that was.
That
there's
was,
a no, scene
that was,
from
that was the Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, Bride of Frankenstein, I'm sorry.
Elvira had, well, anyway.
A giant hand. We've got the
a giant man.
The giant woman.
Through, there's the cat.
Yeah, the cat coming through the window. They Frankenstein.
Back to Young Frankenstein. A mummy.
Yes, there's a mummy. The wolf man.
There's Abbott. Actually, pardon me. I beg your pardon. That was Costello.
Seriously, one of these days we're going to skip Impact and watch Young Frankenstein. In HD, if they have it on Blu-ray yet.
It's a montage of the worst ape suits of all time.
The Hunchback?
There's only two. I don't know if two counts as a montage, but those are both horrible.
That was awesome.
And the next link is Monster Fish.
I want to watch like every single one of those
Groovy
movies.
Groovy Ghoulies!
And laugh uproariously. The Misfits, former WCW stars, did a remix of the Monster Mash. I listened to it. No buys. They tried, but not nearly as good. And somebody in the comments said that was the best version of all. Who the fuck was that person?
Probably Jerry Only.
No accounting for taste. Yes, this is an objective fact that one sucks compared to the original Monster Mash. All right, as noted, we have to talk about Raw and SmackDown and, some pro wrestling. I'm sorry to ruin everybody's fun, but these things have got to be done. And then we're going to jump back. We're going to take a trip down memory lane, everybody. Primetime Wrestling, not the one that Vinny reviewed in the newsletter. This is a brand new Primetime Wrestling on WWE Classics.
22 years old.
It was right around the time I first started watching wrestling, believe it or not. It was actually slightly before I began watching it regularly. Because I started watching it regularly, I've now determined it was right around 1990. Because I actually did go back and I found the Ultimate Warrior Dino Bravo match that was the first match I can ever vividly remember. That was from 1990. And I remember it was I started watching after WrestleMania 5 because I did not see the build up to the Mega Powers exploding. I saw the build up and I actually bought WrestleMania 6, which was Hogan and Warrior. So this was slightly before my time, but I remember everything vividly. Heenan and Monsoon, the fucking montage. I could close my eyes and imagine that entire montage. And many of the same stars as well. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But first off, let's do some highlights from SmackDown. If there were any, Vinny.
I like SmackDown.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I watched it after Impact. And whereas, in fact, Impact had no wrestling, the show was just a bunch of wrestling matches. Most of them were pretty good. And they all had something on the line because the winners of the matches got to be on the SmackDown team at bragging rights.
A show no one will buy.
Well, it's usually there's just matches, and the guy wins, and life goes on. There was at least something theoretically at stake.
And by the way, you were incorrect when you tried to correct me when I said Abdullah the Butcher.
Abdullah the Butcher
shoot DVD.
I see.
He talked about how The Undertaker, for example, was a professional.
I apologize to you.
Yeah.
I when I hear a professional, I hear Iron Sheik's voice.
Well, now you'll have to hear the Abdullah the Butcher voice in your head.
Indeed. Oh, Rey Mysterio and Cody Rhodes had a fun match. They had a good wrestling match. Rey made his comeback and won with his finisher, and that was it. That's all I want. I was so happy to have something very simple presented before me. Stryker in this match claimed that the winners of bragging rights among other things, would get to board airplanes first. That amused me. What else was on here?
What a liar.
It was also a lie, but just that concept. I'm going to train as hard as I can and fight with all my might for the right to get on an airplane before the Raw guys.
How the fuck could you even determine that anyway?
I don't know.
They're actually going to do... WWE is going to buy tickets and choose seats?
Yes.
Okay,
or
sure.
Or perhaps there's a private jet. There are only WWE superstars that get to fly on.
You can say that like the winning team gets first class.
I don't know.
That not have been easier and more believable. Stupid.
Swagger and MVP had a match. It was fine. I did like the fact that Swagger won, and so he got to be on the SmackDown team. Meanwhile, Big Show was doing commentary. He was happy to have Swagger on the team. Didn't care that Swagger had cheated to win.
Of course not.
Completely indifferent.
No.
Show, by the way, was awesome on commentary because he didn't have a script. He just reacted, and he's smart and funny. And he's like the best announcer they have right now. So he needs to be on a microphone every week. Alberto Del Rio had a fun match with Chris Masters. Didn't think this was possible, but he pulled it off. Worked the arm. Masters made a big comeback, and then Alberto cut him off and won with a submission. This was fun. Edge and Dolph had a really good match. It was one of those matches where it starts off and it's just okay, and it goes on for a while, and then it gets a little better, and then suddenly they're doing near falls, and it's great.
I thought you were going to say, suddenly they showed Caitlyn.
That did not hurt.
Yeah, it did, because they only showed her for about 3 seconds in an outfit for the Millennium.
She's a beautiful young
woman. Why did
she
not come out in that outfit?
I don't know what to tell
you. Why did she not come down to ringside and walk around? They showed her for 3 seconds, and she was never seen again.
Yes.
That was the biggest waste in the history of wrestling. I'm trying to think of more wasteful things that have ever occurred. Probably in the history of the world. I cannot think of a more wasteful thing than Caitlyn in that outfit on TV for 3 seconds. Name something. Name something more wasteful than that.
TNA having a two-hour national television show for many years and getting no money out
Nothing.
Of it.
Nothing reproaches the wastefulness of this. This appalled me.
We had a strange, very strange segment, frankly, with Big Show and especially with Caval. Early in the show, Caval said, I want to be in the SmackDown team. Show said, no, you're too small and too new. Caval said, if I can hang with you for 5 minutes, put me on the team. And Show said, okay. So they did the five-minute deal here. Show squashed him the entire time, but did not put him away. And then Caval made a flurry with like 30 seconds to go, and the clock ran out. So it was Big Show giving Caval a sympathy spot on the team, which is odd. And then after commercial, Tyler Rex, of all people, emerged, challenged Caval for his spot, and then beat him in a minute.
I actually have to go find the spoilers and find out if they rescinded that on SmackDown this week, or if Tyler Rex is actually in this match. Let me see what we have here. Spoiler alert, everybody. Not that anyone will remember by Friday anyway. Let's see. We had some matches. Swagger beat Santino. Some other stuff. Lay Cool. Orton versus Kane.
This sounds like a quick show.
Nope. They didn't. Tyler Rex is still on the team.
Odd.
Yeah.
I don't know. That perplexes me.
Didn't get much of a review of Randy Orton versus Kane, but that sounds like the worst match ever.
Oh, I don't know. Not after we watch primetime tonight.
No. Randy Orton and Kane?
I suspect that would be better than Akeem versus SD Jones.
It's toss-up.
Okay.
Very hard to have a good match with Kane, and Randy Orton likes to do as little as possible. This has potential to be an all-time horrible champion versus champion match.
When you put it to that standard, actually, yes. The title versus title match, this would be towards the bottom. So, Cody Rhodes told us to clip our fingernails. Drew and Kofi had a short match. Kofi won with his kick. Undertaker had been on the roof all night. He finally got cold and came inside. And there was bullshit with Kane. He got a promo. There was lights. There was fire on the mat. There were lights in the air. And his scary music was playing.
Speaking of lights in the air, have you seen the UFOs all over the world?
Recently?
Yeah.
No, I was not aware there were a lot of UFO sightings going on.
Well, let's see. In the last week, there have been UFOs over Manhattan, Richmond, and El Paso, Texas.
Wow.
Yeah. It's headlines. These are actual headlines. I'm not making this up.
Headlines Where?
Like, in newspapers.
Not Art
on
Bell's
the news.
Page?
No.
Okay.
CBS.
Oh.
For example.
That's higher, more credibility.
You need to examine the story,
think
Vinny.
About that one.
This could be the end. This could be the end.
The end, you say?
Yeah.
Aliens are going to attack Manhattan, which would suck, and then also Richmond and El Paso.
Well, they're just, that's where they're showing up now. Why else would aliens come to Earth except to just end it all here? Just to look around?
Why do we go places? Actually, we actually usually do conquer.
To
and
rape
take over
and pillage.
Things. Yes. Okay. Yeah, we're doomed. You're right.
Yeah.
All right. Why are we talking about SmackDown then?
I don't know.
Okay. So, yeah, Taker came out. He beat up Kane.
Maybe they're fans.
Sent him back. Is it possible? Are there internet signals that are on radio anywhere? Because
no, Vinny, that's not how it works.
Right.
But nice try.
Thank you.
They could listen to Wrestling Observer Live on Sundays on the Sports Byline Radio Network.
That must be it.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe they have 3G.
Hmm.
No? All right.
I should hope that if they're flying here from another planet, they've got...
at least 4G.
Something like that.
Okay. This has gone off the rails, hasn't it?
Maybe they have 3G. Yeah. You know, we're neck and neck with the aliens, Vinny. As far as I've gotten is 3G.
I don't know.
And interplanetary travel.
I cannot defend myself on this. I said something dumb.
Yeah.
Okay.
You've lost it, dude.
I don't know what happened just now.
Yep.
You want to carry on?
Anyway, I don't even know where you're at.
I don't either. SmackDown ended, Taker set off fire and lightning.
Best part of this show was Paul Bearer. This guy is my hero. Everyone needs to watch this show and just watch Paul Bearer's reaction when The Undertaker sets off Kane's pyro. You have never seen a man more defeated. Vinny, you look like a winner compared to the look on Paul Bearer's face when Undertaker set off Kane's pyro. He was beaten. He was completely... He would have killed himself had this not been a PEG show. That is how demoralized Paul Bearer was when The Undertaker set off Kane's pyro. He is a superstar, this Paul Bearer. So, yeah, this was a pretty fun show.
That was SmackDown, everyone.
Yeah.
Was that a better review than usual?
Yeah, thanks to me.
All right.
Let's play a quick song, and then we'll do Raw, and then we'll get into some primetime wrestling. I think I've only got one shout-out, thank God. Here we go.
Satchel ass. Satchel ass. Satchel ass.
The greatest
mass.
May have been kind of a stretch there.
The greatest
ass.
Okay. The fade out's actually the best part of that.
Nothing to add.
No.
We're just slowly going to fade out the song.
Just likes the sax solo.
All right. Well, go to town on did you watch ROH?
Sadly I did not. I wanted to today and I ran out of time. I suspect it was better than this.
Yeah. Yes it was. And it was better than SD Jones and the Blue Blazer, or whatever that match was that we watched. That was an amalgamation of two matches.
Yeah.
Which still were not as good as.
I'm sure that the two matches together were not as good as the Tyler Black David Richards match.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's still on my DVR. I'll watch it soon. So Raw opened with Teddy Long coming out and the SmackDown music, and it amused me because there's really just WWE fans. There's not Raw fans. There's not SmackDown fans. When WWE comes to town, if you want to go, you go. And if it's Raw, you watch that show. If it's SmackDown, you watch that show. But when Teddy Long named himself and announced he was there representing SmackDown, he was loudly booed. He was hated. It was comical. So he basically said he was taking over Raw. He brought out the trophy. The Raw GM told him to leave. Teddy took matters into his own hands and closed the laptop. And the GM was powerless.
So everyone knew it was so easy.
Yes. That was funny. It led to the SmackDown team coming out and the Raw team coming out. And they were facing off. And the crowd was kind of going crazy. And they stared each other down. And the crowd was into it. And then they started to brawl. And they fought and fought and fought. And I thought, shouldn't this end the show? And by the end, no one really cared. And then SmackDown won the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Raw ran for the hills.
Now, is this a good segment or a bad segment we're highlighting here?
I don't know, actually. It started off good, and by the end, it seemed like something that should have been better.
Hmm.
But,
All right.
All right.
Resume.
The crowd mostly was into chanting, "We want Brett." Speaking of Brett, you had the Hart Dynasty versus Kofi and Drew. They had a fun match, and then, of course, the Harts didn't just lose. They had to bicker like geeks and get pinned in their hometown. So, apparently now Tyson's the one who's going to be turning heel. I think that's much better.
Except that's not what they're going to do.
They said they're just tards.
Well, the plans today were not for Tyson to turn heel. So I cannot explain last night.
Hmm. He walked to the back alone, smiling.
Yeah.
After Perry has screwed up and been pinned.
Don't look at me. I don't write this. I merely report.
When he first showed up on ECW and he was my favorite wrestler. So I want those days back. Poor Zack Ryder. Poor Zack Ryder. He lost to Goldust in a minute. He is doomed. Then DiBiase ran down. Goldust laid him out. This whole thing went less than 2 minutes. This was an impact segment on Raw.
Well, he's doomed, but Goldust is getting a push.
I'm fine with that. That's great news.
Well, so, I mean, it's not like he lost to David Otunga.
All right.
Or Heath Slater.
He lost in a minute.
Well, I guess those guys are main eventers, too.
They have more main events than Zack Ryder does this year. Wade told Cena to
actually,
test.
I don't know if they do, because Zack Ryder got a World Heavyweight Championship match a couple of months ago.
I think main eventing SummerSlam is more impressive than being squashed in the main event of Raw in one segment. A young boy, I didn't get his name. He's the actor who's in Knucklehead. He's done other stuff. He did a skit backstage with Miz where he cut a promo in Miz's face. And then later on the show, he came out to introduce Big Show, and the fans were booing him. And he healed himself, and the kid's 14 years old, and was a complete pro.
Of course.
Sign this boy immediately.
That's why.
Right now.
That's why he's a movie star.
Yes. He was great. There was a bit where, that way came in the middle of two skits. One was Wade wanted Cena to, basically to beat up Husky Harris and Mike McGillicuddy. Cena was fine with this plan. Then Wade said, "Now go get me a glass of water." So Cena left. Then we got the bit with the kid and Miz. And then it went back to Cena coming back with the water. This is where I realized this show is a sitcom. It is written and paced just like that. And Cena gave the water to Wade, and Wade poured it on him, and Nexus laughed.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Cena and Norton had a very good match with Harris and McGillicuddy. Should surprise nobody. They're good. The rookies are good. The pros are good. It was fun. It was very simple. There was shine, and then heat, and then come back, and then a finish. That was all. Babyfaces at the finishers and one. Places are going crazy. And then there was an awesome angle, I thought, where Barrett ordered Cena to get out of the ring. Nexus beat the fuck out of Orton, as Cena could only watch. Went on for a long time. They all hit their finishers. Wade called Cena into the ring. He didn't want his finisher, but he had no choice. And the last second, Wade said, "No, I'll do it." And Cena couldn't even watch. He bailed in disgust. There were titanic boos. I thought this was great.
As I mentioned yesterday, the only problem with this was in a segment 10 minutes earlier, Randy Orton and John Cena had a segment where Randy Orton told him that if he interfered on Sunday, he would punt him and crack his skull. And Cena said, "If you try to kick me, I will tear off your leg." Now this is Cena's best friend.
Well, they fought together and they won a match. They had earned respect.
Hmm.
I was fine with it.
That's a stretch.
I thought it was great.
That's a stretch.
Dolph Ziggler came out in an amazing getup. He had a pink V-neck t-shirt.
This would be like if you and Brent went to Super China Buffet Day, and then Nexus beat the shit out of Brent, and you were ready to cry. You would be ready to cheer. You would be begging to join.
Brent and I have never fought alongside each other.
Well, when you eat at a buffet together, essentially you are.
It's us against food.
You're fighting the good fight against food, yes.
I see.
Yeah.
An interesting theory, Brian.
If I found another fatter man, would that suffice as a good analogy?
A fat guy I didn't like, but I was impressed by how much he could put away?
Yeah.
You'd be
Is
on
there
the,
anyone like this?
I'm trying to think. Someone who could out-eat me?
Yeah.
Actually, you can out-eat me.
Exactly, but, see? If NXT were beating me down, would you be ready to cry? You'd be giggling a little bit. Admit it.
I'd be eating popcorn.
See, exactly. That's why this was unrealistic to me.
I want to talk about Dolph Ziggler's clothing now. He had a pink V-neck t-shirt, a black blazer, gray pants. I can't even describe them as anything else. I don't know if they were Dockers. They were not slacks. They were just gray pants. And then black and white sneakers. And he came out on national television as the Intercontinental Champion in this getup.
Mm-hmm.
People, and this is supposed to make Bryan Danielson not look cool. Bryan looked like a king next to this man. So he came out. He challenged him to a match. Dolph accepted. He slapped him and tried to hide him behind Vicky, but Daniel tapped him out. And then Bryan danced with all the girls. And he was a dork, a giant dork, but he was so comfortable being a giant dork, you couldn't help but love him. So I thought that was a win.
That's one way to look at it, yeah.
Yeah. What the hell has happened? Natalia actually got to win in Calgary,
mm-hmm.
beating Alicia. Then Lakel came out. They made fun of Calgary's weather and beer. They said the hearts belong in a loony bin. Accurate.
Cannot be argued for many of them.
Accurate. Then they attacked her together. Michelle locked on the sharpshooter as Layla took cell phone pics. That was funny.
You know what would have been better if they would have actually got a shot of the hearts that were in the crowd when she said they belonged in the loony bin? That would have...
Was Teddy there?
Well, no, but several of them were.
There's others.
Teddy might have been, actually. I don't think he was. I don't think they would have put him in the crowd.
But yes, Natalia fought them off, so this went as well as could be expected. This is the opposite of the Divas segment they had last week, which sucked. We had a Teddy announced that he had the entire SmackDown roster handy. Vance Archer is still employed, if you're wondering, as is Curt Hawkins. Both surprising. And then we got the Stand Up for WWE commercial. This is, you turn me down, or you turn yourself down, as if I'm going to be talking for a long time. This is not nearly as painful as I was expecting. Basically,
that was my thought.
If you've ever been to a televised WWE event, I think they play this video, or at least a version of it, before all of it. It's 2 or 3 minutes long, probably 3 minutes. It's just them talking about all the stuff they do, all their Hollywood friends, all their Make-A-Wish and troop-oriented charity stuff. What great people they are. They're Hollywood stars. They're talented. They're great fans. It's a promo video for the company. It is... I was expecting a rant about the media and politicians and...
Well, that it was supposed to be, but...
Apparently...
Damper was put on it.
So someone, for once, came to their senses. Yeah. Then there was a great point after it aired when Michael Cole looked in the camera and said... I did not write down his exact words, but he said something about... If you're interested in standing up for WWE, you can go to the website to learn more. Basically, he asked you, the viewer, to do volunteer work on behalf of World Wrestling Entertainment.
A Dizzle on our site. I've not looked at it yet, but he has written here, new YouTube account set up, open to everyone. Stand up for F4W. Upload and show your F4W pride. If you see something incorrect or an injustice being committed against F4W, post it here. YouTube.com/standupforF4W. He's got a username and password here for those of you on the board. I'm not giving it out to everyone here. And, yeah, I can only imagine what is up there right now. It's already a 2-page thread. So, A Dizzle may have hit on something here.
Hit a nerve.
Yeah.
So, the main event was Big Show versus Miz. It went like a minute, and then Teddy Long just announced, let's do a battle royal instead. So, they had a battle royal. It was every hideously dull battle royal ever. The biggest news in this battle royal, and perhaps in all of Monday Night Raw, JTG has his cornrows back. That is excellent, excellent news. So they did their match. It came down to... Zeke, by the way, is on Team Raw. I guess apparently the plan was to put Mark Henry on Team Raw, and Zeke is taking his place.
Mm-hmm.
But Mark Henry was on the show.
Well, yeah, but Mark Henry cannot commit to Sunday because his brother was in a coma. Yeah.
Didn't know. All right. Okay, so you had Monday free. All right. Anywho, it came down to Zeke.
Well, that was awkward for you now, wasn't it?
It was not nearly as awkward as 3G.
Arguable.
So, it came down to the final four of Zeke, Sheamus, Daniel Bryan, and Big Show, except both Miz and Edge were hiding outside the ring. So, of course, Daniel Bryan got dumped immediately. Zeke and Sheamus managed to hit a double suplex on Show. and then Show fought back, and he dumped Zeke. And Miz and Edge both came in and got involved, and by the end, Show and Miz won on behalf of SmackDown. Hornswoggle had the flag and was running around. He has spent the entire match harassing the announce desk so they cannot do commentary. Meanwhile, there was a very boring battle royal going on for like 10 minutes as the crowd chanted, "We want Brett." And then that was the go-home in-ring segment for the pay-per-view. And then the very last thing we saw was backstage, Nexus wanted to practice the celebration, so Cena walked up and he raised Wade's hand.
No one's buying this show.
The last quarter, I thought the first two-thirds of the show or so was awesome, and then it fell off a cliff. Even not awesome. It was good.
Why do they do battle royals? They always suck. They always suck. Mm-hmm. Not the Royal Rumble, because it's intricately booked, but every other battle royal they do sucks every time.
It was a big deal when you saw them once a year in Los Angeles. Everyone, wrestling fans have seen these now, and they're not exciting.
Let's play a song.
In every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. You find the fun, and...
Ogg!
The job's a game. And every task you undertake becomes a piece of cake, a lark, a spree. It's very clear to see.
How'd you miss B right there?
Liquor? Impact.
Go down.
Impact.
Go down.
Impact.
Go down. Just a spoonful.
The disdain in my voice. Impact.
Go down in a most delightful way.
Impact. All right. Prime time wrestling, everybody.
November 22nd, 1988.
A long time ago.
Almost exactly 22 years ago.
Mm-hmm. 13 years old when this aired, I was. Yeah. Shortly before, as noted, I began watching wrestling religiously, I would say.
There's a good chance I saw the show when it came out. Or at least I taped over one of my mom's programs to watch it.
You would have remembered Heenan and Gorilla on the boat.
You would think.
They were on a boat, everyone. They were on Bobby had, they tried to play it up like he had commandeered the boat with a sweet payoff.
Or just smooth-talked his way onto the boat.
But then the boat was called, and it was Gorilla, and Heenan had flown him there, hailed a cab, and was trying to get him to get to the boat. The one thing I'll say about Heenan and Gorilla is there is absolutely no way a single line that they ever did was scripted.
Oh, hell no.
It was a goofball and the straight guy doing improvised bullshit for 3 hours.
They were fucking around.
Yeah.
And recording it.
And we'll get to the best one ever. I actually wanted to end this. We couldn't watch the entire 90 minutes. There was no time. We'd been up till 5 a.m. I wanted to end with the funniest segment, but then the Blue Blazer was going to have a match, and so we had to watch that. But there was at least one fabulous moment with Bobby.
It was the old. I couldn't think of a Bobby and Gorilla moment that could top this.
And I'm sure there were some. There were some back in the day.
This was one of the greats. Sadly, they had to do a match, and it was, as I warned you, Special Delivery Jones versus Akeem.
Not Akeem. The newly created Akeem. He had just switched over from the one-man gang.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
He came out in his blue bodysuit and his yellow boots, and he got in the ring to no music and began to dance, and Lord Alfred Hayes on commentary had a heart attack laughing so hard.
Yeah.
It wasn't that funny.
No.
So.
Jones came out in a Hawaiian shirt.
If you want to call it that. It was.
God-awful match.
It was. They danced. They did punches. Akeem weebled and wobbled but did not fall down. About 5 minutes in, Esty and Jones ran into a knee and took a bump. First bump of the match. Then Akeem hit a horrible clothesline and then a big splash for the pin. And I wrote, what a terrible match.
People think wrestling sucks nowadays.
Yes.
You guys don't remember. I watched this show and I could not believe I remained a fan.
Yes.
There was horrible wrestling. There were some god-awful interviews. We'll get to those in a second.
There were some great interviews, too.
This match was absolutely horrendous. There's no other descriptive term to to utilize here.
The other everyday than replay of the horrendous. Splash, and Alfred Hayes said, and I quote, ba-woom.
We had bimbos showing up, according to Heenan, back at the boat. Hot-ass 80s chicks.
Yes, they were.
In bikinis that were...
not PG.
Cut high on the hip. It's the best way to
yes.
say it here.
And it was the 1980s, so these women had real breasts.
They said they had heard that Hulk was going to be there, and Heenan said, no, but Rick Rude is going to be here, and perhaps some of my other men as well. So Gorilla showed up, and I should note that Gorilla Monsoon, a commentator, did not show up in a small rental car like the world champions of the Impact Zone. No. The announcer showed up in a white stretch limousine, because you see... they were supposed to be superstars. So he was impressed by the boat. He wanted to know who Heenan had robbed. Heenan told him to get on board, but only if he would stop threatening him. So Gorilla expressed his unhappiness to having had a 3-city layover on his flight, losing all of his luggage. And again, we didn't watch the end of the show, but Heenan had to have gotten into the drink.
Oh, of course.
Of course.
Of course.
Just making sure.
It is also... Just wacky comedy in that Gorilla Monsoon is a good guy. Bobby Heenan was the most evil man in wrestling, and yet they were buddies.
Of course.
that's great comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, Heenan didn't get the cheapest flight possible, but he did get Gorilla Monsoon on this boat in California.
Sure.
To hang out with him.
Uh-huh.
He couldn't invite anyone. He invited Gorilla Monsoon.
Yeah.
So, we then had another match. Harley Race versus Alex Knight. The highlight of this, as far as I'm concerned, you may disagree. In fact, I'm sure you will. There's a moment on commentary when Al Hayes said he had been going over Alex Knight's win-loss record. And he was very impressed. He said it was a very good record because of one match in particular. And that one match was because he had to put up a good fight before eventually going down in defeat to Steve Lombardi.
Yeah.
This impressed Alfred Hayes greatly.
Yeah. He was not impressed by Harley Race.
No.
The nor Alfred was I.
In a squash match was burying Harley Race left and right.
Harley did not look good here.
It was Harley
very
Race.
Old.
He was 1988 after abdominal surgery
yeah.
with a guy who did not want to go up for a suplex.
That was the best part. Harley hooked him for a belly to belly, and Alex stood there frozen, and Harley said something to him, probably like, ready?
Go, you fucker.
And he tried to give him the belly-to-belly, and...
Alex dropped to his knees.
No, the first time he just kind of... He maneuvered himself so that he could not be thrown. So Harley tried a second time, and this time he bent his knees to try to not go up at all. And finally, on a third attempt, Harley finally gave him the belly-to-belly. This was a poor match.
Yes.
Harley Race got the victory and used a superplex of all things. And... No buys. Heenan had his life vest on. Girls wanted to know where Ravishing was. Heenan said he was on his way. Gorilla was appalled at this bullshit that this man was spewing. Sean Mooney hosted the event center. What a blast from the past this was. They were plugging Survivor Series, which at this time was still on Thanksgiving. The Thanksgiving Night Spectacular was actually on Thanksgiving night. On a Thursday.
That is a terrible idea.
They were plugging this show. We had interviews with, for example, Ron Bass and the Honky Tonk Man.
This, at the same time, mind you.
Yeah.
They were co-captains, you see,
mm-hmm.
of a team. And I made a point here specifically of not writing down everyone's name to see if I could remember, by the end of the show, if I could remember who were on the teams. Honky and Outlaw were co-captains. They had Greg the Hammer Valentine, Dangerous Danny Davis... Oh, who was the fifth person? Was it Dino Bravo? Did you write it down? I forget. But they ran down the members of their team. They ran down the members of the other team, Ultimate Warrior and Brutus Beefcake and crew, and we'll get to them shortly. Outlaw was cracking his whip and ranting and raving. Honky Tonk Man was trying not to laugh. Then he talked about how they were going to play a tune with his guitar and the bullwhip all over those boys. It was Thursday night. It was outside of Cleveland, and we'll see you there. This was beautiful.
Then what was not beautiful was the big Boss Man and the Ultimate Warrior. No, wait. Boss Man was with DiBiase. Who was with Warrior?
Brutus Beefcake.
That's right. Brutus Beefcake.
Yes.
Anyway,
we'll
the point
the
is,
first one.
Forget all the rest of it. Ultimate Warrior.
Okay.
How the fuck was I a fan of this man?
Didn't like this promo?
Holy fuck.
I will be honest.
This was a classic Warrior promo. I have no idea how this man is still alive. I thought he was going to have a brain aneurysm in the middle of this promo. He was bursting from the seams. I didn't understand a goddamn word he said. He was a horrible wrestler on top of that. And he was my favorite as a kid.
Well, you see, he was big.
He was bigger. Were a lot of big guys in WWE. This was something else.
Just imagine a Brutus Beefcake and Ultimate Warrior promo, and that's what this was. Now, the important thing to me here actually is not Warrior. He was not the star of this segment, not by a long shot. I was most impressed with one jumping Jim Brunzel, and it's not because he was a high jumper. Sam Houston was also there. I think they said Coco Ware was also on the team. But as these two maniacs, Ultimate Warrior and Brutus Beefcake, are screaming and wielding enormous bladed weapons, and their hair is all teased up, and they're going crazy, Jim Brunzel is standing there, looking straight into the camera, not moving, with an enormous grin plastered on his face.
Yeah.
And Ultimate Warrior is screaming and shaking and sweating, and spit is flying, and Brunzel is staring into the camera like the Children of the Corn. And staring, and smiling, and staring, and every once in a while, his
eyes... He looked
like
Stefan Bonner previewing WEC.
A little bit, yes, only much creepier.
Yeah.
And then he actually did look like an American Psycho. And every once in a while, his eyes would briefly peer off camera, and then back right into the camera again. And that was it!
Yeah.
For like a minute, he just didn't move. It was amazing.
Demolition did a promo, and... When I was a kid, I always thought Bill Eadie looked at least 55 years old. He looked like a school teacher dressed up as Legion of Doom for Halloween. As a child, I could never take them seriously. He looked 55 here. He was in his very early 40s, like 40 or 41. I just could never do it. I had seen the Road Warriors, and the school teacher and his mechanic friend dressed up in spikes never did it for me. I could not take him seriously.
Well, I'm sorry you're...
That is what WWE did to me as a youth with all of these cartoon physiques. I could not take these men seriously.
They were merely large men.
And you know what's funny? I was thinking about this too. There was a segment with Brother Love later that we can talk about. But when I was a kid, I was so skewed by the cartoon physiques of guys like Warrior and Rick Rude in WWE that... I remember Brother Love as being really fat.
Yes.
And he wasn't.
No, he was a guy.
He was a guy who may have been a little chubby. But as a kid, I remembered him as being so ridiculously out of shape. And I remember, I know I've told the story before, but, you know, Jake Roberts, who was on the gas at the time, mind you. I remember always seeing his physique. And I remember WWE Magazine had a... feature on the guys working out, and they actually had like Jake Roberts in the weight room, and I laughed. Mm-hmm. I was like, come on, this man's never lifted weights. Look at him. That's what I thought, because I had been so skewed by guys like Warrior, because I was naive at the time. I didn't know about steroids. I was like 13 years old. I thought, you lift some weights, you look like the Warrior.
Sure.
Why don't these other dipshits lift weights? Why is Bill Eadie so old and fat? That's what I thought in my head. Maybe they're right. Terrible influence on youngsters.
Yeah.
Although it did get me into working out. I thought, I'll lift some weights. I'll look like Warrior.
How'd that work out?
I never did, but I've been lifting weights ever since.
Did you ever try putting tassels
in your arms? I live a healthy lifestyle right now. Did ever what?
Put tassels in your arms.
Actually, I did when I was...
Really?
Yeah, and I had no arms, which is the funny part. In YWF? Oh, yeah. I
demand
the tassels
video.
Around.
I demand video.
Yeah.
So, yes, there was a... And then finally, the babyface actually was... Okay, they were doing the Tag Team Survivor Series match, which is not five men in a team, but five tag teams in a team. So the heels cut their promo with managers. There was like 50 men in this camera shot. Then they go to the babyface tag team, and it was the Hart Foundation, the Young Stallions, and the Rockers. Shawn Michaels in 1988. Impossible to reconcile this man who just retired this year. He's lived a hard life. Then the Hart Foundation talked for a while, and they announced that the captains of this team were actually the British Bulldogs and the Powers of Pain, neither of whom bothered to show up for this promo.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Ken Patera and Terry Taylor.
Oh, boy.
Another shitty match.
I'll say.
As we were talking about when we were watching this, actually, first off, when Heenan was thrown into this match, they were talking about Patera, and Heenan said, that guy's an ex-con, which is true. 2 years in prison, tossed a brick through the window of a McDonald's and beat up some cops. Mm-hmm. Went in the clink for 2 years.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe they mentioned this, though.
Well, okay, you were not watching this at the time. I was. They made that part of his gimmick. He had been Bobby Heenan's hired thug, basically, and then he went into prison, and while he was in prison, Bobby Heenan never called him. So he was returning to WWF to basically get revenge on Bobby Heenan. And they talked about how while he was in the clink, he finished his degree. He wanted to make amends for the mistakes he had made and also beat the fuck out of Bobby Heenan.
How about that?
Yeah.
So yeah, this match sucked.
We called Terry Taylor a poverty level Ric Flair. And as the match went on, we realized this was giving him way too much credit.
Yeah.
He was a poverty level Buddy Landell.
Everyone, when he was saddled with the Red Rooster gimmick, it was like, man, this young man with such great potential, career ruined. I don't know about that. He was an average worker given a shitty gimmick. A million guys were in WWE.
Yeah.
The reason this killed his career was because he was not good enough to overcome this later. He was just a guy
doing
Ric Flair spots.
In hindsight, it appears that the Red Rooster, in fact, was the greatest thing that ever happened to him. Otherwise, he would have just been a generic guy.
Well, he said that. He goes, you know, people to this day remember the Red Rooster.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than most guys in this business can say.
That is true. That is true. So, they had a very long, boring match. I swear to God, nothing happened for like 5 minutes, and then they went to commercial. And they went to commercial. They showed a clip of like a bear hug going on, and it said, up next, more action. This is a lie.
Well,
it would have been any action.
Actually, the last 2 minutes were good. Patera made a comeback, ran wild, and then Taylor reversed a slam into a small package for the pin. So
I just meant when it was a lie, and then they implied more action would suggest there had been some action to that point.
I see.
That was inaccurate.
Hmm.
We had Haku
and Jumpin' Jim Brunzel. This was the best match of the evening.
By a billion miles.
Haku came out to the music they still use for Jerry Lawler.
Yes.
He was King Haku. He had a crown. He was billed as a black belt karate expert here in 1988. And he could fucking work. Haku could work. And Jumpin' Jim Brunzel, while not a jumper, really, he could work pretty well. So they did all of their stuff. Brunzel made a comeback, running wild. And then Haku just chopped him and pinned him.
It was a kick.
A kick. Sorry. Just kicked him and pinned him.
Yeah.
Sucks to be Jim Brunzel.
Well, he was no king.
I'll say.
He was fighting the king of WWF here. He lost and he was not the king. The announcers for this match we eventually determined were Sean Mooney, Superstar Billy Graham, and Rod Trongard, I believe was his name.
Mm-hmm.
And it was comical to me, at least, because Superstar would make a point, and then he would want the other guys to speak, but he wouldn't know which one, so he would just mention them both by name. So he would say things like, that was a great move right there, Sean and Rod. And Sean and Rod would not know who to talk, so one of them eventually would.
Yeah.
A poor announced team this was.
We had Brother Love, who was not as fat as I remember, interviewing the Mega Powers.
Vince McMahon on commentary got off a Joe Isuzu reference,
mm-hmm.
which if you're a child of the 80s, you do remember.
So first, Savage and Liz came out, and Savage was wearing the Winged Eagle, still the best belt in the history of wrestling. And Savage grabbed the mic, introduced Hogan. Hogan's music hit, and Brother Love sold the song. Nearly took a bump. Ran for his life. So they played Hogan's music the entire time. He came out. They flexed. They posed. There was not much to this, really. But
the people really went
apeshit for it. And there you go.
It was, and these men would be breaking up in a few months and then wrestling at Mania 6 months from this time. But it was very clear in this segment that although Randy Savage was WWF champ, Hulk Hogan was still the biggest star.
Oh, yeah.
Which fit into the storyline.
So, I was thinking of storylines in the sense that Bruce Pritchard is now working for TNA, so they could do the storyline of Bruce Brother Love being the father of Angelina Love.
Why not?
I think it's a great idea.
I'm worried.
It's a horrible
about...
idea, Vince. Yeah. Seriously. No one's thought of this before? Come on now. Brother Love and Angelina Love. Comedy, everyone. Vinny, you're killing my jokes here tonight. You are the worst Gorilla Monsoon.
Well, yeah.
So then we had the
that
best...
should have been clear.
A real Gorilla Monsoon segment here. They were back on the boat. A great wind kicked up. Gorilla took a bump.
They were at sea. They were, in fact, rocking back and forth in the water. The deck chairs appeared to be legitimately sliding across the deck. Gorilla fell out of his chair, and then apparently just lost all self-control.
Yes. He began laughing uproariously.
You can't even say laughing. He was giggling. He was going, tee-hee-hee-hee-hee.
Heenan was trying so hard not to laugh, but he could not help himself.
He could not look into the camera. He had to just look off in the distance at nothing, try to keep his stone face. And then Gorilla pulled it together and looked in the camera and said, "We'll be right back."
Yeah. Awesome.
This was the best thing ever.
And then we saw Danny Davis in the blue blazer. Owen Hart was considered too small in 1988. He would be one of the bigger guys on the roster today. I should tell you something. This was not the OVW Danny Davis. This was the ref-turned-wrestler who should have stayed a ref. He had the worst outfit in wrestling history.
That's what made it so great, though.
Now listen, Bastion Booger had a terrible outfit, but that was the point. You wanted to accentuate his fatness.
His hump.
I don't know what the deal was with Danny Davis, but they gave him a white spandex top, and he wasn't really in all that great a shape, so it accentuated his man boobs and his out-of-shape stomach. And then, to top that off, they gave him a pair of tights, which were black and white vertical stripes.
Yeah,
which
the referee stripes.
Effectively made his legs and ass look even skinnier, which made his upper body look even more out of shape.
Right.
I could not right now invent a more unflattering outfit.
Because he was a bottom of the card evil jobber. He was not supposed to look cool.
Holy fuck.
It was awesome, man. And it kept his old ref gimmick alive. He was still wearing the zebra stripes. And then even though he was dangerous, Danny Davis, across his ass it said lethal.
And the announcers were flat out asking, why does it say lethal on his ass?
Yes.
No one had a good idea, so they said, make something up. Owen won with a big splash. Place went nuts. Sad to watch.
Yeah.
And then the mood was lightened unintentionally by Gorilla Monsoon taking us back from break and saying that when he saw the blue blazer, he thought of Leaping Lanny Poffo. Yes, everyone.
Yes. Those are the heights to which Owen Hart could have ascended. He may one day be as great as Lanny Poffo.
Because you see, they both did a lot of flying.
Sure.
That's what Gorilla said. We gave up at this point. In fact, I actually had given up earlier, but I had to watch one more Blue Blazer match. Blue Blazer looked good. Danny Davis looked horrible. So there you go, everybody. Primetime Wrestling. We'll maybe watch more next week. I know that next month is Terry Funk month on 24/7. Maybe they'll find the Satchel Ass interview. I would be so happy if they could find the Satchel Ass interview. No one's ever found it. No one's ever found the entire Satchel Ass interview.
It was on
the internet. And somebody got the drops of him saying Satchel Ass and singing the song, but no one got the whole...
It's not on the DVD.
No. No one can find the entire interview.
I have the DVD. It's not on there. Where? Hmm.
No one can find the entire interview.
That's sad.
Yeah. So hopefully they've got it somewhere and they played on 24/7 this month. I would not hold my breath, but you never know. Let's play a song and then we'll do the shout outs here. Let's try this one.
If you got the
satchel,
I've got the
bass.
We'll go honky tonkin' and we'll have a time. We'll make all the night spots dance, drink beer and wine. If you got the
satchel,
honey, I've got the
bass.
We'll have a time.
We'll have a time. Remember when Tim Flowers invited us to a party one time? In fact, invited is the wrong term. He ordered us to go to a party one time.
Was it that... I remember this.
Well, yeah, so the I just remember Tim Flowers, this maniac, let us know there's going to be a party, and then told us, and this is a quote, "It's going to be a hoot."
Yeah. I just always remember, I remember that we went to one party, and it's Street Fighter Tim Flowers, the toughest man in the world. And he commanded us to all go to this party, and we all got there, and there's like, you know, I didn't do any, but there were drugs, there were drinks, it was just fucking debauchery.
There were, in fact, rats.
And at 9:30 p.m., Tim went to sleep.
That's right.
Do you remember that?
Yes, because he was staying the night in Chef's basement, and when he wanted to go to bed, he kicked everyone else out upstairs.
Yeah. I missed him. All right, let's do the shout-outs. I think we've only got one. This should be an easy end of the show. I'm going to read the shout-out, and then I'm going to play a song, and we're done. This is from Dan in Sydney, Australia. It's been nearly 2 years since I signed up to your site, but I have not requested my free shout-out until now. Wait a second. I think we already read this one. Well, you know what, Dan? We're going to read it again. Firstly, I began subscribing to the Hard Copy Observer in the 1990s, 1990 to be exact, realized 2 years ago that it was infinitely better value to sign up to your site instead. Not only did I get the Observer each week, the day it's published, not waiting nearly 10 days like I used to in the old hard copy days, but I can also download Figure 4 Weekly each week in PDF, I might add, Dragon King newsletter when it comes out, plus listen to great new podcasts practically every day. Honestly, all you freeloaders should be ashamed of yourselves. Sign up now. Two things about the Brian and Vinny show before I get to the shout-out. First, while you're a great host, Brian, and I think Granny is awesome, there's no doubt in my mind that Vinny is a star of the program. And to think I read this twice. Maybe you should change the name.
This is a poor evening to read this shout-out.
To the Vinny and Brian show. Yeah, well, that's not happening. Secondly, not sure how you spell his name, but David Hoff-Hoffy is a genius. Big shout-out to Ed Locke, Foz, Dubs, Mr. J, the fabulous Sebastian, Sarah J, Mason Childs, the queen of Shimmer, Madison Eagles, Kelly Rate Tank Skater, First Mate William Kidd, and his mascot Polly, my second cousin Savannah Summers, that fat bastard. Savannah Summers has to be a porn star with that name. And I hope I haven't just offended Dan here by suspecting that. Who is Savannah Summers? This must be a person, because why else would he just shout out a second cousin? Let's find out.
I just turned my computer off. I can't help you.
Can you ever... Oh, she's a wrestler. Oops. An Australian wrestler.
Well, according to Impact,
sorry,
that's even
Dan.
Worse than a porn star.
That's right. If she were on Impact, she would be a whore, basically. That fat bastard Gambino, the rest of the boys and girls involved in Australian wrestling. I'd like to plug my two websites, BettyPaginated.blogspot.com and DocRiot.blogspot.com. And please tell Lance I loved his pink tights in that match off Jericho's new DVD? His NVD.
Knee video disc.
Spectacular. That's from Dan. There you go. That's a shout out. I don't know if I've done something wrong by not having any others here. If I cannot find them, I don't know. But if you sent one and I didn't read it, well, I apologize for that. So anyway, last song here, and then we're going to wrap this program up. Don't forget, tomorrow, Todd Martin and I are going to be doing a special interview with Brian Stan. We may have a second guest as well. We'll find out what happens. But we're going to have the interview with Brian Stan. And later on in the evening, Dave and I will be talking with Ariel Helwani about the UFC show coming up this weekend. And, of course, Lance Storm is up on Thursday and a new Brian and Vinny show on Thursday night as well. So anyway, let's play this song and then we're done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my guest at this time, the great Khali.
Khali! Yahoo! Khali! Khali! USA! Khali!
Go! Johnson.
There you go, everybody. The great Josh Baker. That is it from here. It's been fun times. Watch out for UFOs in 3G.
Godspeed.
Talk to you again after a while.
Adios.